Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Greetings, folks, and welcome to Extra Time. I'm your host, Matt Doyle, MLSsoccer.com's armchair analyst. Ready to give you, that's right, a one-man show, flying solo today because Andrew Wiebe flew last night out to Carson for MLS Cup 2024, presented by Audi, without his microphone. That's the level of professionalism that man has achieved after a decade and a half on the beat. You've got to respect it. So what have we got today? One thing and one thing only, a tactical breakdown of what to expect from the 29th MLS Cup. If you're listening to this, I'm sure you already know that the game's on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern and that you can watch it for free on Apple TV. I'm sure you also know that it's the LA Galaxy hosting the New York Red Bulls, with LA going for their record 6th MLS Cup and the Red Bulls still hoping for their first, which would be their first cup win of any sort. Pre-game show on MLS Season Pass with the usual gang, Wiebe, Sasha Kleshin, Bradley Wright Phillips, the rest of them. That starts at 2 p.m. Eastern. Going to have a lot of info in that one, so I invite you all to crack open a cold one and settle in for an afternoon of what will hopefully be some good soccer. Okay, as for that, will it be? I wrote about this in my tactical preview column, which is up on the website right now, and this game really breaks down into two parts for me. The first is, how have the Galaxy differed without Ricky Puig this season? He is, of course, out with an ACL tear after that remarkable match-winning assist against the Sounders in the Western Conference Final. And then the second part is, how have the Red Bulls changed over the past 2 months, ever since they took a beating in the Hudson River Derby in late September? Remember that 5-1 game? Sandro Schwartz kind of threw it all out the window after that one, and the Red Bulls have become very Red Bulls-ish again in regards to their attitude towards completing passes and having possession and stuff like that. I think we start with Ricky, though, and we talked about this a lot on Monday's show. He is unique in how he plays his role as a number 10 who wants to also be a number 8 and will sometimes drop all the way to the back line and gets more touches than anyone. And it's heliocentric to an extent that we've never really seen in MLS before. And Greg Vanney has talked about this, talked openly about how Ricky plays the position in a way that Vanney himself is not necessarily all that comfortable with. He had to learn to be. And with Ricky, it's worth learning to be that, because he's a world-class passer of the ball. You can't replicate that. And so what we've seen in the five games this year from the Galaxy in which Ricky hasn't played is that they haven't tried to replicate it. Whether it's, you know, Mark Delgado or Diego Fagundes or Marco Reus, who I don't think is going to play much in this one, even though the Galaxy are making noise like he's healthy. I've heard from sources at the team that 20 minutes tops is what they're hoping for from Royce, and they're, you know, it's at the, I would take the under on that number. But anyway, whoever it is out there in place of Ricky is not going to do the things that Ricky does in terms of dropping deep and trying to get a touch on every sequence, in terms of breaking the midfield shape and making the midfield shape, the rest of those guys react almost entirely to him. And that's what Vanney meant when he said he wasn't necessarily comfortable with how Ricky played the position. He had to learn to sort of accept the parts of Ricky's game that are, I guess, kind of different from how Vanney himself sees the game. You don't have to do that if it's Mark Delgado and Diego Fagundes on the team sheet in those spots. Those are both really talented players. There's a reason that the Galaxy were still a really good team, 3-1-1 in those five games without Ricky. It's because they have a lot of good talent in that midfield. But they're good talent in terms of, you plug them into a role and you ask them to play that role without breaking the team shape on either side of the ball. And that's what they did. And it made them, I think, stronger defensively, more structured defensively, less prone to the types of turnovers that at times, especially against pressing teams, really killed the Galaxy this year. On balance, I do think that the Galaxy are obviously a better team with Ricky out there, but it's a lot of variance, right? There's the ability to bury a good defensive team like Minnesota United, 6-2, but there's also the ability to go to Portland and lose 4-2 in a game that maybe wasn't that close, because teams can just sort of camp on you and know that this one player is going to try to do so much that there are going to be chances to go in the other direction. I don't think that's the we're not going to see that version of the Galaxy in this game. We're going to see a bog standard 4-3-3. If anything, I think it'll look, the best comparison I would have would be like some of those really good Sporting Kansas City teams of a long time ago, where there was a clear back point and then two other central midfielders who would kind of shuttle between an 8 and a 10, win the ball and go, a lot of pressing, but also a lot of retreating into a low block to draw the opponent upfield. I mean, honestly, in some ways, it's similar to what we saw from Orlando City in the first half of the Eastern Conference Final against the Red Bulls. Like, they gave the Red Bulls a lot of incentive to come upfield with the idea that they would hit in behind through their wingers and, their number 10. And I think the Galaxy with Peck and Paintsil as the wingers and, maybe Fagundes releasing early and trying to be a little bit more of a number 10 than, say, Delgado will, they can replicate the types of things that Orlando had success with, and honestly, that NYCFC had success with in the Eastern Conference semifinals. So I think that's what we'll see. A buddy of mine, Zeb Bush, who does great work for American Soccer Analysis, he pulled some data for me just to give you an idea of how much of what the Galaxy do has come down to Ricky. He completed 426 passes into the final third this year, which is more than 30% of the Galaxy's total amount. That is an insane amount of burden for one player. And for Ricky, it's not a burden, right? Like, he has to play that way, and he refused to play any other way, even when he was on Barcelona, which is why he's not on Barcelona anymore. It's much more structured, much more positional. Without Ricky in, those five games, the distribution of passes into the final third was much more equitable. It was Delgado who led the team, but also Fagundes was right there with him, sort of shoulder to shoulder. And then the other thing was Miki Yamani, the right fullback. He got much more involved, much further upfield, because if you look at the way he would play when Ricky's out there, he would have to kind of hold his runs a little bit, be less of an attacking threat and more, I think, focused on rest defense because of those turnovers. Well, when you have a more structured three-man central midfield in front of you, you don't have to worry about that as much. You're able to get forward and get into the attack. And so he ended up being a possession weapon and an attacking weapon in those five games in a way that he really wasn't for most of the rest of the season, including into the playoffs. That's not to say he hasn't been a really good player. I think he's actually given them, no matter who's been out there, he's given them a ton of what they need just with his smarts and his positioning and his, he doesn't need to be at the center of it all. And we've seen the same from the left back in John Nelson. He's had some good moments already in these playoffs, and he's done a wonderful job filling in after winning the start, really being handed the starting job via injury midseason, but locking it down since then. But he is more involved in terms of creating attacking sequences in these games without Ricky. It's a really interesting dynamic. In a lot of ways, I think it does make the Galaxy easier to prepare for, because everybody's played against a 4-3-3 at this point, especially one without a genius chance creator in central midfield. The flip side, I again, it's that variance thing. I think it raises the floor for this team. And when you add in the fact that their central defense has been so good since Garces came into the lineup with, I think it was about four games left in the regular season. They've been a top five defense in the league in terms of non-penalty expected goals per 90. And they were, I think, a bottom 10 defense in the league in the first 30 games of the year. So you can see it's one guy making a lot of difference in an area where for most of the year, I had really questioned the Galaxy. I really didn't think that they would be an MLS Cup contender because of that inability to stay structured and that inability to put out fires at the back. And it's all sort of come together throughout this playoff run. And I think it probably even takes a step forward in this game just because of what that three-man midfield will look like. On the flip side, as I said, Red Bulls got drilled in the end of September, that 5-1 loss to NYCFC in the Hudson River Derby. And Sandra Schwartz, to his credit, had tried to soften some of the edges on energy drink soccer throughout the year. They were hitting more short passes, more passes through midfield, completing a higher percentage of them, fewer passes going direct. It was still the Red Bull game model, but it was married to this idea that if the opportunity is there to use the ball, then you should use the ball. And they did well with that, I thought, as long as Emil Forsberg was out or was available. But once he went out injured in early July, they didn't have that one guy who could unlock a defense. And we saw what a struggle it was for the 3.5 months that Forsberg was out. This team won two games. I think it's 2 out of 20 total across all competitions. Like, that is just brutal soccer. And the final straw was that loss. And since that loss to NYCFC, we have seen this team go back to doing some Red Bulls things in terms of high pressing, which of course they did the second half of decision day against the Crew, and then the first half of that game won against the Crew. But even beyond that, they've become a Route 1 team. And I'm going to give you some numbers. So before the loss to NYCFC in September, the Red Bulls took 599 touches per 90, which was 22nd in the league. So still in the bottom third of the league. After, that's down to 476 touches per 90, which is dead last by a mile. Everybody else has taken at least 540 touches per 90. So we're talking 17% gap between the 29th place team in the league, which is the Red Bulls, and 28th. Before that 5-1 loss, they were at 79.4% passing accuracy, 26th in the league. So still not a team that prizes passing accuracy. They still were always going to focus on winning a lot of 50-50s, second balls, huge part of the game model. But since it is second balls are not just a huge part of the game model, they are the game model. And you can see it in the passing accuracy. They're down to 73.6% passing accuracy over the past 2 months. Again, dead last in the league by a mile. Before, this is an interesting one to me. Before that loss, 3.48 attempted switches per 90, which was mid-table, which is a 14th in the league. So they wanted to actually use the width of the field. It makes sense because they were playing that 4-2-2-2, and they were getting a lot of the attack out of those overlapping fullbacks. Since the loss, they have gone to 5 at the back, and they are down to 1.43 switches attempted per 90 minutes, which is 27th in the league. So they're hitting, I think, 40% as many switches per 90 over the past 2 months. And that tells you the very obvious thing if you've been watching this team. They get the ball and they go vertical, like as often as possible, long and vertical. And that's where the next numbers come in. Before that loss, 36% of their passes were forward, which is a high number. It's fifth in the league. The teams ahead of them were like Philly and St. Louis, you know, teams that always want to play north-south. But, you know, not a standard deviation higher than that, right? Like the Red Bulls were in that group or even a little bit behind the leaders. After that loss, 45% of their passes are played forward. Not even like the most dire moments of Gary Smith era absorb encounter Nashville FC were over 40%. No one in the league this year was even close to 40%. And here the Red Bulls are over their past nine games, all competitions. I think it was nine games, all competitions. 45% of their passes are played forward. I think if there's one number that tells you, I mean, as much as possible about the change in the way this team has set themselves up tactically and what they've looked for, if there's one number that does it, it's that one. As soon as you turn the ball over, the Red Bulls are going to try to get vertical in as few touches as possible. And almost half the time, that is their first touch. It's really an incredible thing, and it's obviously something to look out for in this game on Saturday. And here's one more that I think does a good job of telling the story. Before that loss to NYCFC, 14.1% of their passes were long balls. Pretty high number. That's fourth in MLS. Since that game, 21.1% of their total passes, so more than one in five, are long balls. No one else in MLS is over 16.6%. So we're talking 25% more long balls than anybody else in the league. Like, it's not energy drink soccer. It's not. Like, they've done a little bit of that. We talked about this on Monday's show, Kalen and Weeby. They've done some of that against the Crew, especially. They came up field, I think, were baited into it a little bit against Orlando City in the Eastern Conference Final. But this is not traditional Red Bull stuff. This is proper footy. This is like you're watching Burnley in the Championship. And it hasn't been seamless. Right? Like they're not here strictly because of tactics. They're here because, in large part, I think Carlos Coronel has been the best player in these playoffs. He's stood on his head, making one huge save after another, saved, I think it's about four goals over expected goals on target. And when you have a hot goalkeeper and you have DPs who are doing just enough and you have three center backs who are doing just enough, why not absorb? Why not sit back and say, okay, we're going to trade possession and field position for space to counterattack into. And if we're not burying those counterattacks, at the very least, we can damage you on set pieces. And that's plan A and plan B for the Red Bulls this postseason. And there hasn't really been a plan C. And it's not a criticism of Sanchez Schwartz to say that. It's just he understood what clubs in the bag he should be playing on this course. And he has played them relentlessly. And just for the second time in club history, it's the final game of the season. And the Red Bulls are still standing. They're 90 minutes away from potentially their first ever cup win of any sort. So no criticism of Sanchez Schwartz. Even though you could probably tell it's not my favorite type of soccer to watch. So then what do I think will decide this match? I think this is a fun note. And again, credit to my buddy Seb Bush for digging this one up. In those five games the Galaxy played without Ricky, their passes allowed per defensive action, which is a rough measure of how high and hard teams press, goes from ninth in the league, so the pretty high pressing team with Ricky, down to 26th. And I went back and I watched most of those games, and I'm pretty sure that's by design, because Ricky's such an undisciplined defensive player that you can't be without the ball for too long. If he's not getting touches literally every minute, he is going to go seeking the ball and he is going to break your defensive shape. So that's something that I think Vanny had to build into his team, was we need to get the ball back ASAP so that our genius chance creator doesn't get itchy feet and he can get on the ball and he could try to make something magic happen. And hey, 65 points in a place in MLS Cup, you can't argue with that. When he's not out there, it goes back to that structure I was talking about. It goes back to the fact that they're not as prone to turning the ball over in bad spots. And in fact, they're Delgado especially, but Fagundes is also very good at understanding the shape the team needs to be in defensively. So they take less risks. They take fewer chances in terms of who and where they're going to press because they don't have anybody out there who's got those itchy feet, who needs to get the ball back ASAP. And instead, it makes sense for them to draw that line a little bit deeper, try to coax the opponents up the field, and then draw a line of confrontation maybe at midfield or even past midfield a little bit. Let those opponents get comfortable knocking the ball around, and then spring a trap on them and get into a situation where you can isolate one of the wingers, either Gabriel Peck on the right side or Joseph Painsel on the left side, isolate them in the channel and create the types of transition opportunities that the Galaxy are, they are absolutely lethal in those moments. Those guys, and Dejan Jovetic as well, all double-figure goals. And Jovetic doesn't have double-figure assists, but he's got 20 goals and 8 assists and I think about 2,400 minutes across all competitions. Like, that's really, really good. They're all ruthless finishers. They're all really smart about finding chances, and they're all unselfish in those moments. And to me, that is what the Galaxy are going to be in this one, right? And it's not to say that the midfield will have no bearing. Like, if you told me that the game's only goal came from a turnover in which that front three got out on the run, but it was actually Fagundes with a delayed run, finishing a pullback from 16 yards, I would say, yeah, that sounds like something that could definitely, definitely happen. If you told me that it was the Galaxy 70% of the ball and breaking the opponents down, breaking the Red Bull backline down with a 18 pass movement, 14 of which were in the attacking third, I would say that just seems less likely in this one because they're not going to have Ricky and because they're probably not going to have Royce for, anything above like a C-minus version of him. So I think what we saw in the first half of that Eastern Conference final, where Orlando actually enticed the Red Bulls to get on the ball and get upfield, I think that Vanny's going to take a page from Oscar Pereja's playbook in that regard. We saw a bunch of it in those five games without Ricky. And the other thing to note here is that I've been super critical of the Galaxy defensively for most of the year, but I went back and I watched that Western Conference final. And I think I mentioned this on Monday's show. I was really impressed with how, even with Ricky out there, how structured they were and how aware and alert they were of everything that could possibly go wrong if they weren't tight through the middle, specifically with regards to Jackson Reagan's line-breaking passes. Reagan is so good at those. Those passes against LAFC, who's a really good defensive team, I think they started a number of sort of like failure cascades for LAFC where they had to scramble. And the Galaxy almost never got into those scramble situations defensively. Not that the Red Bulls, I think, will try to do that too much, especially if they're not going to start Noah Ayala, who is by far the best passer among their four center backs. But I don't think they'll be vulnerable, the Galaxy, in that situation in a way that they were, I mean, as recently as the elimination against the Sounders in the League's Cup, right? Like they were not exactly played off the field, but like anytime the Sounders were playing the ball up the gut, the Galaxy were just immediately chasing the game. And there wasn't any of that. There really hasn't been any of that from them in these playoffs so far. What there has been, and this will play to the Red Bull's strengths, is the Galaxy aren't great at first ball, second ball soccer, right? And that's what the Red Bulls have done. Hit a long ball, try to knock down that long ball into the path of an on-rushing midfielder or a second forward, and just go from there. It's not that the Galaxy are bad at it. I think since Garces has come into the lineup, they have a physical element that they were lacking, and Maya Yoshida is still very good at reading the game, as you would expect from someone of his experience, but it's not their strong suit. And this is, you know, if you're a Red Bulls fan, this is your hope, is that it looks like one of those two crew games. With the first one where the Red Bulls were able to press pretty effectively for 30 minutes before retreating into that shell, or the second one where they were able to do that first ball, second ball, and create chances. They did the same thing a little bit against NYCFC, though NYCFC did a really good job of putting Coronel under constant pressure. And I mean, Coronel's performance in that game was an all-timer. And that's it, right? Like, if you're choosing to play the Nilas brothers, who've both been pretty good, and Andres Reyes, who has been good, but you know, like begging to get sent off, you're choosing long ball, second ball, over the ability to build from the back in the way that this team did for the first 8 months of the year. And again, I'm not going to criticize Sandra Schwartz for that, because look at where the Red Bulls are now. I certainly didn't have them going this far. I don't think there are many people who did. Even Red Bulls fans, who I'm still friends with, didn't have much hope that this would be the team that made it back to MLS Cup for the first time in 16 years. I was at that game 16 years ago. I will say that we walked into the Red Bulls fans, we walked into that MLS Cup final with zero expectations that we would walk out with a trophy. That Columbus Crew team was fully healthy, and they were so far superior to even the best version of the 2008 Red Bulls. I think it is a much closer, much tighter matchup this time, because with Emil Forsberg back, and with Coronel playing like this, and with Ricky hurt, you get the Red Bulls at a level that feels at least championship adjacent, and you get the Galaxy at a level that is much, I don't want to say much, but is less dynamic than what we've seen from them throughout these playoffs. I still think that the Galaxy are the favorites. I wouldn't be shocked if they lost. I'd be a little surprised, but not shocked. Whereas 2008, it would have been shocking to me and everyone else if the Red Bulls had won that game. You can probably tell from the way I frame that I am picking the Galaxy. They're in Carson. They haven't lost all year in Carson. Their only home loss this year was in Pasadena, in El Tráfico. And even without Ricky, they've got match winners. Peck and Paintsil have been phenomenal. Jovalić, we saw what he could do against the Sounders. Coronel has been, like I said, the best player in these playoffs. John McCarthy is a former MLS Cup MVP. He's not going to be overawed by this moment, is what I'm saying. And like, when they've had to call on him in this postseason, he has mostly delivered. He hasn't been as, mind-bendingly outstanding as Coronel, but he hasn't had to be. Garces and Yoshida together, they don't make mistakes. They don't they don't give you the types of chances that the Galaxy were just sort of handing away for free earlier in the season. The numbers, like, I have them before me now. Before Garcés, they were allowing 1.46 non-penalty expected goals per 90, which was 21st in the league. So a bottom third of the league defense. In the 8 or 9 games since Garcés has been in the lineups, it's 1.05 non-penalty expected goals per 90, which is a top five mark in the league. The Red Bulls could still do it. I think they're a better team on set pieces, and we've seen this Galaxy team be vulnerable vulnerable on set pieces, even in these playoffs. The Red Bulls can do that first ball, second ball thing. That is a distinct advantage for them, though I do like the Galaxy's ability to deal with it a little bit better. If Delgado is next to Edwin Cerrillo, kind of playing in a double pivot and looking to clean that up, and you don't let Emil Forsberg, get on that ball immediately. You don't let, whether it's Stroud or Edelman or Carballo, if he's back and available for this one, you don't let them win the ball off the knockdown and score the kind of scorcher that Carballo had against NYCFC. So I think the Galaxy are a little bit better built to deal with that than they might have looked on first glance. But still, there's a path for the Red Bulls. There is a path for them to do this thing. But I am picking the Galaxy. I'm picking the home team in MLS Cup. It's been a dominant run for home teams for most of the past 10 years. And that's what I think we'll continue to see in this one. But we'll see. The game is on for free on Apple TV on Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. That pregame I said at the start of the show was that it starts at 2 o'clock. It actually starts at 2:30 p.m. You could catch Weeby and Sasha, Brad, Kalen Kyle, Kevin Egan, all the rest of the gang on that one, breaking everything down. I'm looking forward to watching that. I will be on my couch with a hefty pour of something wonderful for that game. Oh, you know what? There's one more thing I wanted to cover. Club World Cup draw was announced today. And obviously, we're going to be talking about this a ton on this show over the next 7 months, 8 months, however long. But just so we have it on the record, Inter Miami get Palmeiras and Porto for their first two group opponents in the Club World Cup. The Seattle Sounders get PSG and Atletico. So Miami got a much kinder draw. I still don't think either of the MLS teams will be expected to advance. Anders is in the chat right now begging me to provide analysis of Seattle's group. I will say that PSG have been abominable this year. And I would sacrifice maybe two fingers, maybe even a foot for the Sounders to pull that one off, but I'm not going to go into that game expecting it. So just wanted to put a bow on that one. We will have more talk about that in the months to come. On Monday, we will have an MLS Cup MLS Cup recap, and then a look ahead to the expansion draft, which is coming in the middle of next week. San Diego officially take their bows as the 30th MLS team. And then in the weeks ahead, we have the re-entry draft, we have free agency, we have the MLS Super Draft, and then we have like 3 weeks of offseason, which I am looking forward to. And I am also looking forward to this MLS Cup. I appreciate you guys sticking with me. 35 minutes, not bad for a monologue right there. And I appreciate you guys sticking with us all year long. The big game is coming up. It's less than 48 hours away now. I hope you guys all enjoy it, and we will talk to you soon. We'll be right back.